athletes in Beijing are the very best in the world at what they do. They find every angle of advantage and design their bodies to fulfill them. Like dragsters and trophy trucks, they are purpose-built. Which is why it's so surprising to find Olympic events and careers that reward the compromise of two entirely distinct disciplines. On today's podcast, the masters of shifting gears. From NBC Sports, this is The Podium, a podcast about the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympic Games. I'm your host, Lauren Shahadi, coming to you every day from the ground with a unique angle on the performances that are carving what's possible on ice and snow. Preparing for the 2022 Winter Games is an exact science of timing an athlete's peak performance on the week, day, and sometimes even hour when medals are on the line. That's all well and good if you're a skeleton racer for whom Olympic gold is up for grabs every 4 years, or a 100-meter runner competing on the balmy tracks every quadrennial. But what if you're both? Worse yet, what if your Olympic seasons are occurring only 6 months from one another, instead of 2 years?
In a nutshell, it's hectic and borderline insane. It's been an absolutely wild ride for me. And that was mostly because the Tokyo Olympics were pushed back by a year. And we had to deal with the pandemic, and very understandably. And because of that, I had to postpone my training and then condense all of my training so that I was able to qualify for two Olympic Games. And knock on wood, it all worked out. I was able to qualify for both. And here I am in Beijing, China, just wrapping up these Winter Olympics.
It is hard enough for an athlete to make the Olympics. It's even tougher to do it in a sport different than the sport you're known for.
Last summer, I was looking at the 100-meter times, and I was wondering if I could actually be competitive in the 100-meter dash.
The 100-meter dash is the rock star event of the track and field world. And Nathan Icon Crumpton wants to be the guy everyone will be talking about. But he's been here before, which brings us to his main sport, skeleton, where he was a member of Team USA for 8 years, living in Park City.
There's a good bit of overlap between the two.
Nathan Icon Crumpton, athletics and skeleton racing.
Nathan, welcome to the podium. Before we get into how you shift from summer to winter athletic form, I would like to address the oily elephant in the room. You have been in the headlines recently, my friend. Why is that?
At these Beijing opening ceremonies, I believe that's because I walked out shirtless in very traditional Polynesian and Samoan attire in -5 degrees Celsius weather, lathered up in a bunch of baby oil.
Well, Nathan, we showed everybody the opening ceremony. You walk in with the flag all oiled up. Come on, man. How cold was it, really?
The one thing that got really cold were my hands. The rest, it was actually okay. I had that heavy jacket on that you saw, and I was just doing a full warm-up, jumping up, running around, just trying to get hot and warm, and it worked. My core body temperature stayed great. I wasn't exposed for too long, and I think 11 years of practice of sliding on ice in just a thin spandex speed suit had me well prepared. So overall, it went off without a hitch, and super happy to do it.
And that seems to have attracted a whole bunch of attention, an overwhelming amount of attention. And it's new to me, too. I'm not a star in the Olympic sport. Skeleton is a sport that usually exists in obscurity for most of the four-year cycle. But I think that's probably the key reason why there's been a bit of extra attention thrown my way.
I'll say that's the reason. Let's start with your prep for Tokyo, a process that started not even a year ago.
So I finished my skeleton season in February of 2021. And luckily, it actually ended a month earlier. We were supposed to go to China for the whole month of March of 2021 to test out the Olympic track. And we weren't able to because that race was canceled due to the pandemic. So I was actually able to start my training for track and field early, make the transition between skeleton training to track and field training in March. And that actually probably saved my qualification because I was able to get an additional 4 weeks of training in, because it's not a hard transition right away. I try to make it a more of a gradual transition, especially because I'm not as young and as able to recover as I used to be. I'm 36 years old now. And so I'm definitely past my athletic peak. And so managing that recovery time and managing that transition between sports proved tricky. But having those extra 4 weeks also proved integral to being able to do that. So in March of 2021, I started running. It was still snowing. I was in Italy at the time. And then it turned into much more serious training when I wrapped up my time in Europe and I went to Florida. And then I started training at the IMG Academy down in Bradenton, Florida. And that's where I really started focusing in on the track and field. I had a base layer of training. I was still fighting some latent injuries from skeleton, but I had a coach. We started working on block technique and we tried to get me in as good of running form as possible leading up to the Tokyo Summer Olympics.
You know, you mentioned that base layer. I look at a 100 meter sprint and a skeleton push, and I see two explosive runs. Why doesn't your form from one translate to the other?
I like to say there's about a 50% overlap between skeleton training, at least for the push, and then 100 meter dash training, which is just upright sprinting. It's a rough calculation because there's so many ways you could break it down between the training methods. Excuse me, one second. Sorry, just to get the noise blocked. So, between skeleton training and upright sprinting, there's about a 50% overlap. And it's, like you said, it's based on the quick twitch muscle fibers. Both skeleton pushing and sprinting rely on quick twitch muscle development. So that's fortuitous. That's a good thing because I can train both of those at the same time. But when you get to a really high level of competition, there's actually a divergence in the two. And that has to go down to biomechanics for one, and the force required in each sport for another. So the biomechanics, there's a tremendous difference in your body positioning. The order of muscle recruitment and the order of strain on the muscles is different for pushing. And because of that, when you get to the elite level, there's actually quite a stark difference. And what's really interesting is having tracked this through the years and trying to perfect these different techniques, at the elite level of skeleton racing, there's actually an inverse correlation among the fastest pushers in the world between their push times in skeleton and their upright sprinting times.
Wow, that's interesting. So being the world's best at one almost ensures you won't be at the other. Is that compromise something you work with? I mean, I'm sure you had to compromise for your training turnaround after Tokyo.
Yes, I absolutely made a compromise, and it was a very conscious decision that I had to make in order to achieve this goal. The most notable one was when I transitioned back from the sprinting into the skeleton racing, and I essentially had to truncate my workout program, where because skeleton racing relies a lot more on brute force development, it's more weight training focused rather than running focused, because again, you're pushing, you're propelling not only your own body weight, but it's your own body weight plus about 75 pounds of a skeleton sled in a very awkward and unnatural position. And to do that, I would usually have an extended hypertrophy phase, a high volume hypertrophy weightlifting phase at the beginning of the season to build up that extra muscle. And I completely had to negate that. There was not enough time between the Tokyo Olympics and the start of the skeleton season to be able to do that and to get ready for racing skeleton, that is. And so I looked at the calendar and I looked at what I had to do, and I just said, I'm going to have to sacrifice this. I'm going to not have the base layer of training that I want going into the skeleton season. And I'm also not going to have the mass that I want.
Yeah. And that's what it's going to take. Are you really good at multitasking in life aside from athletics?
I would like to say yes, but I try not to be. I'm trying very deliberately to focus. There was a really good book that I read a few years ago called Focus by the psychologist Daniel Goleman. And he made a very compelling case in that book to not try to multitask because evolutionarily, humans are not very good at multitasking. And yet, for whatever reason, my brain is drawn to a variety of different sports, much as it is a variety of different intellectual pursuits. Maybe I'm just not very good at focusing. I don't know. But it certainly makes my life more interesting. And I don't have the answers. I just love sports. I love pursuing a lot of different things. And I feel very lucky that I've ended up at two Olympics within 1 year.
Sure. What is this whole process, a pretty laborious one, of being a two-season athlete, add to your experience at these games?
I think it means more to me. I think it's special in many respects because it's something that few Olympians have been able to do. I don't know the exact count after these games, but I think it's still fewer than 150 Olympians out of the thousands of Olympians throughout history who have been able to do both a winter and a summer games. And so from that perspective, it's deeply gratifying on a personal level. I feel honored that I've been able to do it. I feel very lucky that my body has held up as well as it has. And I hope it's something that years from now, I can look back on and derive some level of satisfaction. And hopefully it acts as something that inspires the next generation of athlete.
Finding the athletic pursuits, plural, upon which to dedicate your life is a game of give and take. For one event in Beijing, flying by the seat of your pants in juggling two competencies is very much required.
Nordic Combined is a men-only event at the Olympic Winter Games with two disciplines, ski jumping and cross-country skiing. Athletes need strength and control for ski jumping and incredible endurance for cross-country skiing. There are three Nordic Combined events at Beijing 2022, individual normal hill, individual large hill, and a team event on the large hill. All three competitions begin with ski jumping, followed by cross-country races. In the individual events, the cross-country
races... I've seen rankings of hardest sports come out, and Nordic Combined is at the top of that list.
My name is Jared Shumate, and I'm a Nordic Combined athlete.
My name is Taylor Fletcher, and I'm a Nordic Combined athlete.
Gentlemen, welcome to the podium. One thing that fascinates me about Nordic Combined is that you're packing both the widest, longest skis in Beijing for jumping and also the thinnest of cross-country skis, really kind of telling about the switch that has to take place to excel at Nordic Combined.
Yeah, with Nordic Combined, you're mixing that with endurance cross-country racing. And so that goes from scaring yourself on the ski jump to pushing your body to its absolute limit for 25 minutes. So yeah, just trying to combine those two sports. I think it's a weird combination, but I fell in love with it and I'm competing at it at the Olympics. So I'd call it a good sport.
You talk about combination. How big is the mental jump then from adrenaline to endurance?
Yeah, it's definitely a big mental switch. You can't approach them completely the same. You have to be in that competitive mindset, regardless of it being ski jumping or cross country. But it's a kind of a different personality. So, you know, for me, ski jumping is kind of a happy-go-lucky, you know, type of mindset. Whereas cross country, I like to see the people behind me suffering, and I like to go as hard as I possibly can for as long as I possibly can. And so it does take different sources of energy and mental capabilities, but you know, in the end, it's one event and you're pushing it as hard as you can on the limit in both ways.
We talked earlier about compromise, and you have to make them in training, right? You obviously can't specialize for just one single event. How far off the results of those athletes that only ski jump or cross country ski are you?
It's pretty large, actually. The Federation of International Ski actually did a study about 5 years ago, kind of figuring out why Nordic Combined is like the way it is right now. And they took, you know, the top 30 athletes from ski jumping and from Nordic Combined, as well as from cross country, and ran a series of tests on them. What they found was the top jumpers on the Nordic Combined circuit could be within the top 30 on the ski jumping circuit. And same with the top 30 Nordic Combined skiers could be in the top 30 on their cross country. But the difference between 30th and first in those respective disciplines is quite large. And so, you know, to be honest, I think it's that specialization that really kind of separates the two sports and really drives the top end to be even a little bit higher. Whereas that, you know, middle ground usually tends to stay the same.
And that makes sense. So how do you score two separate events?
Yeah, so for ski jumping in Nordic Combined, the score is works out to be about half distance and half style. So depending on the distance that you go on the ski jump, you get a certain amount of points. Essentially, the farther you go, the more points you'll get. And then you also have to look good while you do that. And so we have a total of three judges' scores that contribute to your final score. And so the best looking jumps will get the highest style points. And if you kind of stumble a little bit, you get deducted. So we essentially do a ski jumping competition fully. And then the winner of the ski jumping competition will start the cross country race at 0 seconds. And then for every point you are behind the leader, you have a certain time deduction. And so typically for every point you are behind the leader, that's an additional 4 seconds that you start behind. And so on, for example, our competition yesterday on the large hill, each meter is 1.8 points. And so you kind of realize like the shorter you go, that time deficit adds up quickly. So ski jumping is super important, especially as the level gets higher and higher. And then like Taylor said, for cross country, it's the first person across the finish line wins.
You know, and to put it in a simple context, you got to jump far and you have to ski fast. The best jumper is going to have most likely the most style points because was able to put in a good landing. And then it's a, you know, all out race to cross that line first.
And that difference also manifests itself in what you're wearing even, right?
Yeah, we have two suits. The jumping suit is, you know, required to catch as much air and fly as far as possible. So we want it as big as possible. And the cross-country suit, we don't want anything, you know, catching the wind. We want to be able to slide right through and ski as fast as possible.
I'm still curious, what's the added value of doing these two events? Compromising on each of them, is the sum greater than the parts?
Yeah. I mean, obviously I'm super biased, but I think Nordic Combined is super exciting because you have those two very different types of sports, and then to see an athlete try to do both of them perfectly, it's hard. So I think people from any perspective understand how hard elite level sports are, and to see us try to combine two super hard sports into one, I think is always exciting. And as the level in Nordic Combined gets higher, it makes it closer and closer between various athletes in various countries. So we've kind of seen that at this Olympics, like anybody can win on any day.
The cool thing I really think is with ski jumping and cross country, you know, if you don't have the best jump, you have a chance to go out and redeem yourself, get a little bit of redemption and try to chase up anyone in front of you and cross that finish line as high as possible.
Every 4 years, the world's greatest athletes compete for gold. That time is now. The Winter Olympics on NBC and Peacock. 17 days of action, excitement, glory, and history in the making. Don't miss a single epic moment. The Winter Olympics continue tonight on NBC and Peacock. Follow The Podium now on Spotify to get automatic downloads. And tune into the networks of NBC to watch every moment of the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympic Games.